And now, beautiful people going fast on fire. Welcome to the True Fiction Podcast, Kino Club Edition.
Welcome to True Fiction's Kino Club Edition. Kino Club is a group of friends who go see movies and then talk about what we saw. This is a warts and all recording where we share the good, bad, and ugly. Tonight, we're going to do things a little bit different. This movie is an older movie. It's from 1974. It is Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. We wanted to talk about a movie that we love and want to share with our listeners. Before we get too far in this Kino Club roll call, I'm Pat.
I'm Norbert.
I'm Marshall.
Young Frankenstein is a parody of Mary Shelley's book from 1818. The movie stars Gene Wilder, Peter Boyle, Marty Feldman, Cloris Leachman, Terry Garr, and Madeline Kahn. So basically, the story of Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein or modern Prometheus, is about Dr. Frankenstein, who creates a monster, and the monster escapes and havoc ensues, and it's just a whole big thing. Young Frankenstein is a comedy horror film directed by Mel Brooks, and it's really about a descendant of the infamous Dr. Frankenstein and how he basically decides to build a monster himself and what happens there. So this is a parody of the classic horror film. One of the things we would like to talk about on this is why it was such a great movie. And we're also going to get some criticisms, which is only fair, but who wants to start tonight?
I will start. I like Gene Wilder in just about anything to start with. He has had Stir Crazy and Blazing Saddles are some of my favorite comedies of all time. So we start with that. This is a more loving homage to the original Frankenstein than I think most people would give it credit for. It has fun, but you can tell that it's not belittling the source material. So I like it from that standpoint. The cast is fantastic. I find it refreshing that it's not bound by today's no-no list. And from that standpoint, and it has a early appearance by Gene Hackman, which I'm a big fan of Gene Hackman as well.
Gene Hackman in this, it's one of my favorite parts. Of course, it's easy to say that right now. I think it's so surprising. And it's such a good scene, the old blind man. And part of that was taken from The Bride of Frankenstein when there is an old blind man that serves Frankenstein soup, which it doesn't go as well in this movie, how he gets the soup, but and it's just old-time slapstick.
I really enjoy this movie. I like it a lot. The one thing that I tried to watch it more critically this time since we were reviewing it for the podcast, and something that I noticed that I probably haven't noticed before is how well the story is moved along. Even as a comedy, it's interesting the way they give information to the narrative, like the whole scene, one of the opening scenes where Dr. Frankenstein is in the class with his students. It sets up so much of the plot and exposition just within that interaction. You understand that he's the grandson of the great Dr. Frankenstein and his feelings toward his grandfather's work, and that there's still this idea that could be brought to life. And I just thought that whole exchange is really well done. And there's not really a lot of, I wouldn't say there's a lot of fat on it at all. And it moves the story along, but at the same time, there's room for jokes and gags that made it funny to get the story across. And you learn so much about the story, it sets it up for the rest of the movie just in that little spot. I thought that was so neat that they did that. It would be interesting to read that as a script of how it was written, just as like a study of setting up narrative.
There actually is a video on the script writing of that. It was an idea that Gene Wilder had. He didn't have very many pages of it. And when they were talking about wanting somebody to direct, Gene really wanted Mel Brooks, but he didn't think he could get Mel Brooks. But I think it's interesting how he took what he had of the story and he shared it with Mel Brooks, and Mel Brooks had decided to do it, but I don't think they'd ever worked together before. It was a great pairing of creators. I have to agree with Norbert. At the time, Gene Wilder was, I thought, was one of the funniest people on the planet. Another thing I like about this movie is the replayability of it. I don't think that it gets less funny. I think it gets funnier every time I see it. It's one of those movies that you remember what's going to happen next, but you get excited about it. I remember the original Frankenstein. It's very iconic when Dr. Frankenstein is saying, "It's alive, it's alive." And he's just maniacally laughing. And I think that's a great part. But when Gene Wilder is, he's got those big goggles on, he's on top of the roof and he's saying, "Live, damn you." And it's so iconic. And his hair is just so wild. There's so many scenes in this. I just want to make posters and put on walls and stuff. And speaking of photos and posters, there's a really cool one where I've seen where Gene Wilder's hugging Peter Boyle in the makeup. And even though the movie was shot in black and white, the stills from it are in full color, which are really cool. Peter Boyle, playing Frankenstein's monster, is in some kind of a bluish gray paint. And it's all full color, and it's just an amazing picture. And they used, by the way, they used old wipes that they used to use back in the day. The set with all the spinning electric things and everything, those were actually from the original Frankenstein movie. They were, I don't know, borrowed or brought over, but they were, that's, those sets were used.
You think, so you mentioned colorization. That's something that as I was watching it, I was thinking, I don't have a problem with it being in black and white. And I think it adds to how iconic of a movie it is, because when you think of it, but I also feel like, do you think it was mostly just a homage to the original Frankenstein, or do you think, or was it meant to seem a little older, or what do you think? I guess I think there's more of a creative decision there than just to make it look iconic, but I don't know what that was or why.
I think what's really interesting, and I'm going to answer that question, what I think, and I don't know this, I'm just going to tell you what I think, but I want to go back to what, so we had this amazing book by Mary Shelley, and it's one of the most popular books that has ever been written. It really handles a very heavy subject about not only if man could create life, but should man create life? That's the whole thing about that movie. You can talk about that subject forever, but then they made the movie Frankenstein, right? There are some differences between the movie Frankenstein and the book Frankenstein. And so this, even though he says, and I think they were making a parody of the Mary Shelley book, they wanted it to match the movie. You know what I'm saying? I think it's almost a parody of both, or also an homage for both. So I think that the black and white was more of the homage to the old movie. Because for one thing, Gene Wilder talks about how when he was a kid and he's seen this movie, it scared the hell out of him. He was scared by this movie and The Bride of Frankenstein, and really tough today and during the time of Terrifier and Hereditary and all these movies that we see, that somebody's going to be afraid of Frankenstein. But if you watch the original movie and try to put yourself in that mindset of what you're watching, and maybe even read the book, and you put the mindset about this creature that you don't really know what to expect from this creature. I think they did it mostly for an homage, and it's also something that it was deep, something that really meant something to the movie itself, meant something very special to Gene Wilder.
At least it feels like it. When you watch this movie, like I said before, it doesn't feel like it's a comedy, but it's not belittling the source material. It's trying to work from it. You know what I mean? There's points in this movie, while there's fun parts, there's serious parts on it. You can feel how, especially what Marshall was talking about with the setup, you can feel like how upset he is about being what his grandfather did and how he's trying to separate himself from that. And it's almost jarring, almost how the drama of it. It's not what you expect when you see Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder together. It's like trying to almost elevate, hey, when you watch this, wouldn't you be more curious to see the 31 version or whatever year it came out, the original version this came from? At least it makes me want to watch the original version.
Yeah, the original version too is, I just watched it about a month ago and it's truly amazing. It truly is. It's such a great piece of cinema and there is so much emotion. One thing that's not stressed so much in the movie that's stressed in the book is that Dr. Frankenstein created this monster, created this thing, basically where there was no life, he created life, and then he abandons it, and the creature feels abandoned, and that's why the creature acts out for the most part. In the book, that's very heavy. I know that they made several different Frankenstein movies, but none are as iconic as the 1931 one. Of course, Norbert, I know that you, as a young person, read the Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein, the graphic novel. And that is in itself really is another retelling. When a story's been told so many times, the teller gets to put their own spin on it. And definitely Bernie Wrightson put a spin on this story, also with the look of it. And I think that's very cool. I know that the Bernie Wrightson's Frankenstein was a huge part of you growing up. How do you feel when you look at that, compare it to this and compare it to the original Frankenstein?
For me, the book is different in that what you was talking about, abandonment, the creature felt abandoned and he got more upset because he wanted a mate. He wanted Dr. Frankenstein to make him a mate and things really got off the rails because Frankenstein decided he wasn't going to do that. And so it's such a tragic story that it's almost less a horror story than it is a personal tragedy. But this kind of touches on this. But like I said, it just doesn't, you can tell that they wasn't out to make fun of it in any way. So that's was my takeaway from somebody who's read the source material, which it's not what most people think they're getting into when they read it. It's not a traditional horror story at all. It didn't scare me as much as I felt bad.
It's interesting that when you look at the 70s and up through the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, the 90s and the 2000s, there were quite a few Frankenstein movies. But during the 70s, there was Frankenstein Must Be Destroyed in 70. Horror Frankenstein in 70, Curse of Frankenstein in 72. If we keep moving on, and we said Young Frankenstein was made in 73, but so was a movie called Castle of Freaks. Frankenstein, the True Story was also made in 1973. And then in 74, we had Flesh for Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell. And of course, Young Frankenstein. So I thought that was interesting that we did have kind of a love affair with Frankenstein at the time. And I don't know whether the population was interested in Frankenstein or the art and film crowd were interested in making movies about Frankenstein. But it's an interesting time with Frankenstein.
Yeah. Frankenstein is always a rich subject that I imagine filmmakers want to tackle because you're making life. It's a primal subject that people are going to come back to. Nowadays, though, it seems like it's less the biological creating life as opposed to the artificial creating of life and sort of the dangers that are incumbent upon doing that, which today's Frankenstein would be something like, I don't know, her maybe, something along those lines. But
if you think about it, Ex Machina would probably be
even better. Yes, yes.
Would be a definite, because really Frankenstein is a warning. It's a warning to not mess with nature. And now we've got don't mess with the robots kind of thing. No, don't mess with technology because it can go just as bad.
Let's open Pandora's box and you never know what's going to happen when you do it. And I will say, here's the difference between Young Frankenstein and the original, at least the original book, is that Gene Wilder's character, which I'm not surprised because I think this is somewhat his character, but he doesn't abandon his creature in the end. He wants to save it and redeem it. And that's the difference between that story and the original story, is that there's that dichotomy between he's the nurturing kind of a personality or the caretaker, which sort of, if you think about some of his roles, it fits in with some of the other roles that he's played.
Yeah. Anytime somebody acts in a movie, you're seeing a bit of that person. And maybe not a lot, but it's got to be even more when they write the characters. And he did write those characters, a lot of them. Why would 2023 audiences watch this movie? I can say a couple things why I think they should. And it may just make me sound like an old geezer, but I don't care. The movie was very well made. To parody it, you have to be enough like the original so that people can see the examples. And when it starts, they did the credits from a 1931 movie. We need to look at how movies are made then, and credits are different these days than they were then. And this one was made with the credits of 1931, the way that the credits come. What we were just looking at the castle, and then we do a slow fade into the castle. And that's all from a different time. So also, I think that the music, I just think the music was so well done. It's not farcical. It's actually, you would hear this kind of music in a movie from that time. They did so much to show what the original movie was about. And like I said, Gene Wilder said this is from Mary Shelley's book. And there are some things in his movie that were not in the original movie. And there were probably more from the actual book. But the look and the music is definitely from the film, the 1931 film.
Well, I don't remember the putting on the Ritz scene in the original book.
Oh, they cut it out. Yeah, yeah. It was cut out.
Is that in the extended version?
Yeah. But I think people need to see how you can make a movie, a comedy like that, and still make it look like good cinema.
100% agree with that. I will go back to what Marshall was saying earlier. If you're somebody that likes cinema and likes good movies, this is a good movie to watch because of how efficient it is. One of the things that Pat talks about a lot is talks about cutting the extraneous. This feels very lean. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of scenes where you're like, why did they put that in there? You don't have that. I'm wanting to say this movie was, what, one hour, 37 minutes or something along those lines. In the last, I would say, 5 years, there's been a glut of movies that are 2 hour pluses. And this shows you that you can tell a good story in an hour and a half, get in and get out. And I think it's a better movie because it doesn't have the extraneous in it. I think that we have become so used to these movies being longer than they need to be. It's refreshing. You need to see this to see, hey, you can do this. You can tell a story, a complete story in an hour 37. One of the things that I think is fun about this movie is it is from the 70s, and there's a lot of innuendo and silliness that you could never see in today's movies. Like how people can be when they're in groups and be silly and say things that are probably inappropriate. I actually find that part of it refreshing in that it wasn't overly hall monitored.
And Mel Brooks is known for doing whatever the hell he wants to do. One of my favorite lines in Blazing Saddles is when they're fighting in a... Basically, the Western breaks into a Chorus Line production. Why not? And Clem Pickens, he's fighting with somebody, and he walks up to the guy and he says, screw you, I work for Mel Brooks. And then they get into a big fight. I've always loved that line because I always felt like, well, that was Mel Brooks. Screw you. It's a Mel Brooks movie. Who cares? It's fun, and that's all we care about. And this goes from funny to just downright ridiculously silly. You've got this monster that he's created, this 7 foot tall person with a zipper on his neck and all sewn up, and he's doing, putting on the Ritz, he's dancing with him. It's just the most ridiculous, funny thing in the world.
Yeah.
And yeah, and the way he talks, it's got to be experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I echo a lot of the same sentiments in the sense that I think the production is amazing for a comedy. It's a real production. And there might have been things that they cut corners on compared to other films around that time. But when you watch this, it really feels pretty timeless. And everybody was, you know, even though it's a comedy, they were still acting. There's still a lot of dedication to the way that they acted and the way that came across in comedy. And I don't see that in a lot of modern day productions. I kind of wonder if there's this kind of subconscious idea that it's just a comedy kind of thing, to where they don't invest as much in the production, or they don't invest as much in conveying what it is to emote and act convincingly, to where I think there's a lot of comedies that come out nowadays that are worth a quick chuckle, but definitely don't have a timeless feel like this. Because that's something else I noticed is watching this, is that I think there are some things that are dated, but it's not as dated as some of the things that come out today or things that I've seen 10 years ago that were comedies that are hard to rewatch, where this definitely has rewatchability to it. And I think that's important. I think people should watch it for that reason, especially if you're interested in creating comedy or creating humor of some type in an artistic way. I think there's a lot of notes to take from this that I think a lot of productions have since lost.
Well, another point on this movie, and part of it makes me wonder if it's because it was shot in black and white. But a lot of movies in the 70s had a grungy, almost dirty feel to the, I don't know if it's because they used cheaper film or what, but this doesn't have that. The black and white looks cleaner. It doesn't have that kind of 70s grunge feel to it. At least that's my perception of it. And that's another thing that sets it apart from a lot of even movies from its own era. It just doesn't feel, it has more in common with films made in the 30s than it does almost in the films made in the 70s.
Absolutely. It's such a class act, the whole movie. Even with off-color jokes, it's still such a class act. And Mel Brooks always has been a class act. And of course, maybe it's because this is what I grew up with. I love silent movie. One of my all-time favorite Mel Brooks is History of the World, which I think is still an amazing film. This is probably up there second, third, because I think Mel Brooks was just an amazing director and writer and producer. I think he did such good work.
And courageous.
And absolutely. But I don't know. I say courageous now. I don't know back then if that was courageous. Mm-hmm. Doing what he did, I think, just straight out doing a movie, running a black and white movie in the 70s, I think that is pretty courageous myself. But I'm just really floored by most of the stuff that he accomplished. One thing I always remember when I see this movie or Blazing Saddles is how much I love and miss Madeline Kahn. She was an amazing talent. She was so good at everything I've seen her do. And History of the World is some of the funniest things. She's a high point in that movie. Mel Brooks liked to use her a lot. And she was just amazing. An amazing female comedian that was just, I really think, underrated. She was so good.
And when she puts on the accent, it's just,
yeah,
she's fun. And in the scenes with Frankenstein, you're just
oh, I love it when she comes out with her hairs up and she's
all bright and bright.
She's awesome.
Yeah. And it's one of the things is people, now we're getting to the point where Everybody Loves Raymond is in the rear view, what, 20 years now, 15 years?
Wow, yeah.
But Peter Boyle as the Frankenstein. And most people probably will know him from Everybody Loves Raymond, but he was great in this movie.
He's amazing. Now, the funny thing is, Gene Wilder was having a kind of a lunch with his agent. And his agent said, what would be really great is if you wrote a movie and it was you, Marty Feldman, and Peter Boyle. And Gene Wilder said, that sounds cool. Why? He goes, because I represent all of you people. And that's exactly what happened. So he put them all in the movie. And Marty Feldman, man, I don't think we've ever had anybody like you. I don't think there's anybody that has ever come close to being like him. Everything I've seen Marty Feldman in, I just thought he was amazing. He has his own look. He's very funny. He was always breaking the fourth wall in this, looking at the camera and mugging and everything. I thought that was funny in this. He was an amazing actor and a comedian and just so much fun. And he's also in a silent movie, Mel Brooks' Silent Movie, which is Gene Wilder, Marty Feldman, and Dom DeLuise, which is what a great cast.
We can't go wrong with that cast.
Oh, no. Huh? We did say that we would talk about some criticisms we had about this movie. What do you guys think? What are some things they could have done differently? Could have done better? Could have left out? Put in?
And my major, and this is not really even a criticism. My one point with this movie is that it doesn't have quite the feel that some of the other Mel Brooks movies have in terms of the slapstick sort of humor. There's humor in this and it's funny, but it's not as over the top in amount or volume as some of the other. This is a much more restrained movie. So I'm not sure this is a criticism other than the fact that if you're a Mel Brooks fan and are thinking that you're going to watch something of a Frankenstein movie with sort of a Blazing Saddles feel to it, this is not quite that. This is different than that. So it's not really even a criticism. It's like when you think of Mel Brooks, you think of Spaceballs and that sort of stuff. And this is not quite that. This is different. And it's good. And in the end, I'm not sure that it's may not be one of his best, but the tenor is a little different.
I feel the same way. And I think that's why I have a hard time saying this is my second favorite even, because while I love this movie and it's just amazing, I think this was one of the first movies that Mel Brooks took a kind of a theme and ran with it. So after this, then he made Blazing Saddles, that's the Western. And then we had Silent Movie, which was a silent movie. And then we had 77, we had High Anxiety. So it was basically based on Alfred Hitchcock movies, which I thought was another wonderful movie. And then we started with movies that had themes, but definitely didn't feel like they were shot in that kind of world. Robin Hood and Men in Tights is a very funny movie. It's just not like filmed like an old Errol Flynn movie or anything like that. And Dracula Dead and Loving It, while I thought it was a good movie, it wasn't like they were borrowing from the original Dracula or anything like that. And it was just a funny movie with funny people in it.
Yep.
I don't know if that was a criticism or not. I don't know if I found a criticism in that I just said.
I think it's almost like you criticized up some of these other movies.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I think my criticisms are probably the same as Norbert. I think that it feels a little more restrained. And I think it's because it's a more dialogue heavy comedy than his other movies where there is more slapstick and physical gags. I think that's probably the only thing. I think sometimes the dialogue might have gone on. It's tough to say that because I appreciate the dialogue in this and how much it pushes along the narrative. But at the same time, I feel like maybe in some spots it would have been nice to just be joke after joke instead of some of this drawn out scenes or dialogue. But that's probably my only criticism.
One thing that I found, and you can go YouTube this, there's cut scenes, or I should say scenes that were cut out. So one thing I never questioned, but when I looked at the scenes that were cut, I noticed, you know, the guy that carried the box that had the last will and testament of Frankenstein, that was never read. Not in the movie, but that was a cut scene. That was a scene that was cut. I don't think it really mattered, but when you think about it, it did just happen that he moved and all of a sudden he's living in Transylvania. Or he was going and visiting. It could have been a longer movie. I watched the scene that they cut, and I'm glad they cut. I don't have a lot of criticisms of this movie. I think that the movie came out in December The movie had a budget of $2.78 million. It made $86.2 million at the box office. I would say that was a success. And we're also talking that was in 1974 money. So that's like a gazillion right now, I think, if my math is correct. And it's not always about the money that the movie makes, but I don't really have many criticisms about this movie. And it's funny because I've watched this movie, I don't know how many times. This is one of those movies that I've watched a lot over the years. 74 is a long time ago. I was 10 years old when that movie came out. That's been a while.
I have almost half criticism. If I thought long enough for it, at it, and watched it maybe another time or two, I would have some little nitpick. But if you're to that point, then you're just trying to have criticism.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we leave it there. And I would highly recommend, if you've never seen this movie, to watch it. I would also highly recommend, if you haven't seen this movie in the last 10 years, watch it, because it's wonderful. And do yourself a favor. After you watch this movie, go ahead and watch the original Frankenstein. It's an amazing piece of cinema that, thank goodness, we still have. Some of the old movies are gone now. Luckily, we did have a chance to digitize these movies so we can see them, some of these amazing films from the past. And there you have it, folks. Another episode of True Fiction's Kino Club in the books. Thank you for joining us for another round of Movie Madness and sharing your love for cinema. Don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And stay tuned for next week's episode. Until then, keep your eyes and ears open for the truth in fiction. Good night.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the True Fiction Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please visit us at Facebook. You can also leave us a review on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. Until next time, stay true and stay creative.
You're too late. Catch a ride somewhere else. Catch a ride. Catch a ride.